In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
We've said it before here on iSpy Radio, and thank you for joining us today, that the fundamental difference between free market healthcare and government-run healthcare is that in a free market, you're a customer. But in government-run socialized healthcare, in other words, Obamacare, you're a liability. In other words, you cost the government money. That's why the government has a fiduciary responsibility to make sure you cost the government as little money as possible. In government-run healthcare, the government has a perfect right to tell you what to do. If you give the government control over your healthcare, you give them control over pretty much every aspect of your life. It's why big government liberals like Michael Bloomberg think that they can tell you how much soda you can drink. And actually, they're correct. They have a right to tell you how much you're allowed to drink because you gave them that right when you gave them the right over your health care. Maybe you should eat less. You need to exercise more. And those guns in your closet? Well, we've determined that you're not mentally fit to have them because you're a Republican and you don't believe in global warming. Healthcare is the means that the left uses to control people. The environment is how they control business and industry. Your industry pollutes too much. You're damaging the planet. Your cows drink too much water. Before you open a new plant, we need to do an environmental impact study. To build that house, you need to buy mitigation credits, and on and on. But now, that's all about to change. There is a new president and a new EPA chief, and neither of them want to control business. They are saying to go out and create, build, start new plants, hire new workers. But be careful about it. Think of that, and think of the billions of taxpayer dollars that will not be going to far-left groups that support far-left politicians who raise billions of taxpayer dollars that go to far-left groups. Yes, things are about to change so much at the EPA that Democrats may soon have to raise their own money. I'd like to welcome Myron Ebel, the director of the Center for Energy and Environment at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. He also chairs the Cooler Heads Coalition, a coalition of over 24 nonprofit groups that question global warming alarmism and oppose energy rationing policies. Myron, it's good to talk to you again.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah, you know, the world has changed just a little bit since we last spoke to you back in June. You know, back then, your nonprofit organization, the Obama administration, was trying to sue you guys for daring to question the religion of global warming. You'd been subpoenaed by a group of attorneys general attacking your freedom of speech by trying to sue you using RICO laws, of all things. That's something that's normally reserved for going after the mafia. Clearly, the government was out of control back then, and then along comes Trump, and he wins in November, and the world suddenly changes. And now, instead of facing down an out-of-control government and in court, you were put in charge of the agency that you had been fighting all that time, the EPA's transition team. So what was that like, you know, looking back at that? Does that all seem rather surreal now?
Mark, it was a five-month volunteer experience working for the Trump transition from September to Inauguration Day. I'm not part of the Trump administration. I just want to make that clear, sure. So I'm not speaking for them. I just worked on the transition, getting ready for it to take over on January 20th. It was a real privilege to do that. I worked with some fantastic people. I learned a lot. And I think we did a good job on the EPA transition team. We had some very skilled people, experienced people who know what the problems are in our environmental policy and our over-regulation. And we wrote an advisory plan for how the administration should fulfill President Trump's commitments that he made during the campaign. And that plan, it's an advisory document, but I think we had some, there's some good stuff in it in terms of how to implement the Trump agenda. So, yeah, no, it was a great experience, and I hope it helps get the Trump administration off to a good start here in the next few months.
But in terms of going from being sued by the EPA and the Obama administration? Because we know that had Hillary won, you would certainly be facing that now. And going from that to now Trump being in office and actually helping dismantle the EPA, does that all seem kind of surreal looking back at that?
Well, it shows that elections have consequences,
yes.
And sometimes we are very surprised by the outcome. The fact is that I think President Trump, as a candidate, tuned into or plugged into a kind of discontent across the heartland, and particularly in rural and small-town America, where if you look at the economic history of the last 20 years, the coastal elites in the financial world or in Los Angeles in the entertainment industry or in Silicon Valley and in high tech, they've been doing really well. But people in the trades, the people who dig up stuff, make stuff, and grow stuff for a living, have really borne the brunt of government policies, and particularly federal policies.
Yes.
And so I think President Trump, as a candidate, saw that, and he plugged into it, and I think that's why he was elected. And I think if you look at the numbers in terms of voter turnout across rural and small-town America, and that includes in the Northwest, even though he lost Oregon and Washington and California, I think even in those places, the rural turnout was huge,
yes.
And it was very strongly pro-Trump.
Well, and you grew up out in one of the areas that we broadcast, and you grew up in Baker County. And I think you're right. There's this coastal elite that somehow forgets that in order to have things like smartphones and computers and high tech and everything else, they forget that people have to get their hands dirty to get that. And it's unfortunate that they seem to think that they can just rule by fiat. And the EPA, I think, is comprised a lot of those. The coastal elite, that they seem to think that they can just mandate all of these different regulations, I mean, and it not have an effect on the rest of the economy. And they seem to think that they could just make these blanket decisions and not have it impact people. But clearly it was. And I think you're right on that, is that they seem to forget those people that do go in there and get their hands dirty on a regular basis.
Yes, and I think if you look at the policies of the Obama administration and the Democrats in Congress, it was to really try to force the rest of the country to become like California and
yes.
New York, where we have high energy prices, high electric rates. We're forced into smaller and smaller cars, smaller and smaller houses, and we have an economy that's based on manipulating information, like financial information. I don't see a Hollywood springing up in, southern Indiana or Kansas. And so I think that their vision for the country was very unfortunate, because it just isn't going to work. Some people in some parts of the country, as you say, are going to continue to have to get their hands dirty. And not sit in front of computer screens all day. So, as I do here in Washington, talking on the phone and sending emails and looking at documents. So, I think the country said, we've had enough of that. We can't turn the whole country into California, where energy costs are twice the national average. We have to change course. And so, I think. Reforming the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, and getting rid of some of this regulatory rampage that they've been on,
yes.
Is really right at the tip of the lance. That's job one for the Trump administration.
Yes, and how fun for you to be part of that. All right, let's go ahead and take a break there. Coming up, we'll have more with Myron Ebel. Stay with us. And welcome back. We're talking today to Myron Ebel. He is the director of the Center for Energy and Environment at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. CEI is a nonprofit public policy organization dedicated to advancing the principles of limited government, free enterprise, and individual liberty. And, we were talking in that last segment there about the arrogance of the coastal elite that we ought to be shoved into these smaller houses and smaller cars. And it's not just that we ought to be shoved into these smaller cars and smaller houses, but their arrogance is such that we ought to be grateful for that. And that's one of the things that just drives me nuts about these elites.
Yes, and I think you see that in the cultural divide between the people who are now enthusiastically supporting President Trump and his agenda, and the left that are taking to the streets and attacking people. And, you know, one of the things I learned from the Tea Party movement was you could go to a really large Tea Party event with hundreds or even thousands of people, and afterwards there wouldn't be any trash at all. The people would pick up everything. You go to one of these left-wing marches in Washington, and they trash everything. There is just rubbish, and you can't believe it. And you wonder how you know that number of people could be so slovenly and messy. And I think that's a big difference now. You see, in terms of the conduct and the mores between left and right in this country.
Well, and I think the other thing that is really a big difference between the Tea Party back then and what is going on right now is when the Tea Party got involved, they were holding their own side accountable. They weren't just out there protesting at Democrat rallies, but they were out there protesting at Republican rallies and holding their feet to the fire. And you don't see that happening right now. They're just out there causing troubles at Republican-only town halls. They're not going out there and causing problems with the Democrats saying, hey, you know, you need to get yourself in line. Instead, it's only against the opposing side. And that's why I just don't see that this is going to last. We talked about the irony of you getting involved with the Trump transition team because you were the Trump transition team in terms of the EPA and reforming them. And the irony because you were actually being sued by some attorneys generals over environmental policies. As part of the transition team, you guys ended up helping to pick Scott Pruitt to head the EPA. Why did you pick him, and how did you arrive at that decision?
Well, I had nothing to do with it. the transition was organized into silos, and the personnel silo was different. It was separate. And in fact, after the election, I was in the agency side, so each department and agency had an action team. And we, you know, of course, we talked to people in personnel, and we made suggestions and gave them lists of names. But it was really a completely separate process. And for the cabinet secretaries and the top people, the EPA administrator is not a cabinet secretary, but he's, you know, the head of an agency. So all those decisions were actually made after the election up in Trump Tower by the senior campaign people that Trump put in charge of finding his cabinet for him. And of course he did a lot of interviewing himself. So that whole, you know, I think Scott Pruitt is a good choice, and I'm he was definitely on my list. Mm-hmm. But I can't take any credit for finding him or picking him. I mean, you know, he was a very prominent attorney general in the state of Oklahoma. And so he was an obvious candidate, and I think he's going to be really good. So I think it's worked out well.
I think it'll be good too. In terms of them actually selecting Scott Pruitt, then, because I'd kind of like to get a handle on how all that went down. So if I'm hearing you correctly, you guys kind of put together a series of policies and some changes that ought to be happening at the EPA. Was that then handed over to the Trump team, and then they then made their pick based on who would be able to fulfill those? Is that how that worked?
No, we worked in tandem. I mean, the Trump campaign commitments were well known. I mean, so they had lists.
Yes.
So when they went to look for a cabinet secretary, they knew exactly what President Trump had promised during the campaign, what he said he would do. So they were obviously looking for people that would fit that agenda. Now, I think in some respects, there are some people that have been chosen, and I don't want to get outside of my issue area, but my general impression is that they picked several people in other areas that don't fit the agenda quite as well. And I think you see a little bit of tension becoming apparent occasionally. We'll see how it works out. I mean, I think every administration is like that. You have some people who are Well, if you go back to the Reagan administration, you had the Reaganites who were totally on board, and then you had the people that Vice President Bush was putting in who were only, you know, partly on board. And so you ended up with a cabinet and a White House that had a lot of Reagan people, but it also had some Bush people who weren't quite as enthusiastic about the Reagan agenda. Now, I don't think you see that difference between Trump and Pence, but I do think, you know, there are different factions and in the party and in the campaign and in, you know, the people that Trump has around him. And so there are some people who don't fit the agenda quite as well as I think Scott Pruitt does for EPA.
I see. Well, you know, during the confirmation hearings, and not just for Scott Pruitt, but a lot of the cabinet positions, the Democrats were making a great deal of they were throwing a lot of questions out about climate change and whether or not people believed in it and so on and so forth. Do you have an idea what exactly Scott Pruitt's beliefs are regarding global warming?
I can't speak for him. I think it's clear from looking at his record that he has been very careful not to say a lot about climate science. Hmm. What he said a lot about is climate policy. And he has, as Attorney General of the state of Oklahoma, has been one of the leaders opposing the Obama administration's climate agenda. And he is one of the lead plaintiffs in the lawsuit against the so-called Clean Power Plan. And in several other lawsuits. And I should say that CEI, my organization, is also a co-plaintiff in that litigation. And we have been a co-plaintiff with Scott Pruitt when he was Attorney General in Oklahoma on several other lawsuits, including one trying to overturn Obamacare. So we have worked with him and several of the other state AGs a lot the last few years, and you know we've gotten to know him, and I think very highly of him, and I think, as I say, he'll be a good EPA administrator.
Well, it certainly will be interesting as that rolls forward, and that's what we'll be talking about in the next segment. Stay with us, more with Myron Ebel. And welcome back. We're continuing our discussion here on the iSpy Radio Show with Myron Ebel. He is the director of the Center for Energy and Environment at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. And, of course, we'll link up their site on our site, iSpyRadio.com. And, you know, with Trump taking over at the EPA and Scott Pruitt getting in there, those on the left have basically been predicting all sorts of doom and gloom. In fact, there was an interesting article out by The Hill, and you can kind of get the sense of where they're going with it just from the title of their article, Trump Takes Hatchet to EPA. And this is kind of what we're hearing over and over and over from the left is that, well, I'll just read you the first couple of sentences here. President Trump has launched the opening salvo in his assault on the Environmental Protection Agency. Trump is tearing into the EPA's budget by a reported 24%, which, if approved by Congress, would slash the agency's $8.1 billion budget to George H.W. Bush-era levels and reduce the EPA's workforce by one-fifth. Trump and his newly installed EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt are also beginning an aggressive regulatory rollback at the agency, taking aim at climate change programs instituted or expanded under President Obama. And I know that they're thinking this is gloom and doom, but I'm not hearing anything bad.
No, I'm all smiles. The fact is that President Trump ran on a very clear and very aggressive agenda. He said he would get rid of all of the Obama climate programs and rules. He would roll back other rules, environmental rules, that were killing investment and therefore killing jobs in the economy without doing much for the environment. That is useless rules, but expensive ones. Hmm. And he also said that he would like to abolish the EPA and send most of its work, its protecting the environment, to the states. Well, the fact is that the state environmental agencies already do most of the work for the Clean Air Act and the Clean Water Act and the Safe Drinking Water Act. And so the question that was posed to us in the transition was, why does EPA need 15,000 employees?
Yeah.
If so much of the work has already been devolved to the states, and couldn't more of the work be devolved to the states? And I think the answer is they don't need all those employees. A lot of them are there to create mischief and to not improve the environment, but to harm the economy. put working people out of work. And so I think what President Trump has done, he's just going right down the line of what he promised in the campaign. And so the first budget cut for EPA is 24%, which even I was surprised by how big it was. But, you know, there's this guy at the Office of Management and Budget who's putting the budget numbers together named Mick Mulvaney. He's the new director. He was a member of Congress from South Carolina, and he's really an expert on this. And all he thinks and dreams about is how to cut federal spending and reduce the reach of the federal government. So, you know, President Trump picked the right guy there, and, you know, his first cut for EPA is 24%. For the Interior Department, and that's all, you know, all the federal lands in the West, and I think Oregon is 52% federally owned, he's proposed a 10% cut, and the new Secretary of the Interior, Ryan Zinke, said, well, that's too much, I'm going to fight that. Well, we'll see how that turns out, because I think those are the kind of reductions that President Trump ran on.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. You know, you mentioned this notion that there's 15,000 employees there at the EPA, and a lot of them are creating mischief. And there was a story that broke last week, and I say broke, but we had actually talked about this years ago, where Fox News uncovered that the DOJ had a slush fund for funding far-left organizations. And one of the tactics that they used to fund the slush fund is the DOJ would sue the banks for one thing or another, and as part of the settlement, the banks would then agree to pay money to nonprofit groups as some sort of reparations or penance for their sins, and it amounted to billions of dollars. And this tactic has also been used by the EPA for years and years, but it's hard to track these monies paid to the far-left groups because under Bill Clinton, they eliminated the means to track those funds under the Paperwork Reduction Act. Do you have a ballpark figure of how much money was being funneled to these far-left environmental groups?
No. As I understand, I mean, here's what goes on, particularly when the Democrats are in office. Some left-wing group, and let's just take an environmental group, sues the government, and the government actually wants them to win because they want to change the law, but they can't get Congress to do it. So they settle with that group, and the law is changed according to the judgment of the court, which the government has agreed to, and then the group that has sued files to get their legal expenses paid. Okay. And there is this thing called the judgment fund that pays out the legal expenses for people who win lawsuits against the federal government. And so that's a secret. We don't know how much money is being doled out in the judgment fund. And I think one of the things that needs to be done by the Congress is to change the law so that we know, so that all this is out in the open. And because I think if it's out in the open, it won't happen nearly as much.
No.
And once people see how large some of these legal fee settlements are, they will say, hey, that's, you know, you got to be kidding. I mean, we know lawyers are expensive, but this is outrageous.
Well, especially some of the lawyers that they hire are actually like law students, and yet they're allowed to,
right.
They're allowed to bill at top law firm rates.
Right, right. So, yeah, the whole thing is a scandal, and it needs to be addressed. It can be addressed initially by the Trump administration just not settling these lawsuits and also, when legal fees are awarded by the court, to try to get them reduced and say, hey, that's too high, let's make it half of that or one-third of that.
Yeah.
But I think it needs Congress. Congress needs to step in and say, we're changing this, and it's not going to be secret anymore, and you just can't get away with taking billions of dollars out of the Treasury without taxpayers knowing about it.
Yeah. Well, and it's not just lawsuits, but it's just flat-out grants that the EPA will sometimes issue as well. We only got about a minute and change here with you. One of the things that I think that has people concerned is, you know, getting back to that Hill article, is I forget exactly who's saying this, but he says that I think what we're seeing is Trump continuing to put polluters first over the health of the American people. And I think that is what is the fear of some people as Trump rolls out some of these changes. And although the left, of course, would be saying that even if he was increasing the EPA budget, but how would you reassure the average reasonable person out there that no, Trump is not going to be putting polluters first and that he really does want clean air and water while holding polluters accountable?
You know, most of the work of the Environmental Protection Agency starting in 1970 to clean up our air and water pollution has been accomplished. We don't need this huge agency anymore. It's out of control. It's going way beyond what is needed to protect our air and water. It's yes. It's inventing all kinds of new things that need to be regulated. No, the fact is that these things are in the law. The EPA has to maintain standards for air and water so that we're healthy and safe. Reducing the size of the agency isn't going to change that. It's just going to get rid of the excess baggage that is no longer required now that most of the goals of the EPA have actually been accomplished. We still have major environmental problems in this country, but they're local. We don't have a national problem with air pollution. We have a problem with air pollution in the Los Angeles Basin, for example.
Yes.
There are still water pollution problems, but they're very limited now. They're very localized. So the EPA has really succeeded, and so we don't need nearly as much EPA as we used to have.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Myron, I want to thank you so much for your time. His organization, one more time, is the Competitive Enterprise Institute. You can find them at cei.org. Myron, thank you so much.
Thank you, Mark.
And welcome back to the iSpy Radio Show. We've now got a new guest with us, Dr. Tim Ball, although he's certainly not new to our iSpy Radio audience. Dr. Tim is a retired professor from the University of Winnipeg, a Canadian geographer and historical climatologist best known for his public opposition to the so-called scientific consensus in the global warming controversy. Dr. Tim, it's always a pleasure.
Well, thank you for that, and I really appreciate the opportunity and the good work you're doing of getting out all sides of an issue.
Well, thank you. And, you know, we just had Myron Ebel on, and it was really fascinating discussion with him, simply for the fact, if nothing else, the severe turnaround from where he was almost a year ago. In June, we had him on because his organization was being sued by the attorneys general because they did not believe in global warming and not standing up to the, you know, not towing the religious line, so to speak. And in an unprecedented step, the Obama administration used the RICO laws to silence political opposition and silence free speech. I mean, it really is astonishing. And now here we are 9 months later, and you've got Trump in office, and Myron Ebel actually helped give some directions in terms of the EPA, not only policy directions, but also who would head the EPA. I mean, what a turnaround.
Well, it is a turnaround, and of course, in a way, we can thank the founding fathers for it because, of course, they deliberately set up a system where there was constant accountability. And I know a lot of people outside of the United States say, "Oh, those Americans are always having elections." Well, there's a reason for that. The minute you give somebody power, you got to start taking it away. You don't let them get comfortable. That's one of the issues. The other issue, of course, is that a brevity of time meant that anybody that wanted to totally overthrow the U.S., certainly you could do it with revolution, there's no doubt about that, but in terms of evolutionary change, you had to do it so quickly that people would notice right away. Hmm. And you should go back to remember what Obama himself said. He said, "I'm going to be a one-term president." And the reason that he said that was because he knew the changes that he was going to implement would so irk the American people that they'd throw him out of office after one term. The problem was, of course, that the Republicans that didn't vote for Romney. Those 3 million Republicans handed Obama the second term that he never thought that he would get. And of course, one of the things that you're going to see, and Myron, of course, has already been dealing with this and looking at this, is the extent to which the Obama administration changed rules, changed regulations, and worked through the bureaucracies like the EPA, because that's how leftist governments work. It's in the civil service, or, well, I prefer to call them the swivel service, and the bureaucrats. And of course, Maurice Strong knew that. That's why he set up the whole climate issue as a world-threatening issue that only a one-world government could operate and would be run through the bureaucracy of the United Nations. So, yeah, it's thanks to the Founding Fathers that we've got this change.
In terms of Maurice Strong, though, we're seeing changes here on the U.S. level. We got Trump in office, and we saw Brexit earlier in the earlier last year. And you've got now France and some of these other countries also saying, you know, maybe we need to follow the U.S.'s lead here. Do you see the whole global warming start to unravel here?
Oh, it never was there. This is what's amusing about it. If you look at the Paris Agreement, it's called an agreement because Obama knew he couldn't call it a treaty, because the minute he called it a treaty, he needed Senate approval. And the U.S. Senate has never approved any climate, the Kyoto Protocol, the Green Climate Fund, which of course was central to the Paris Agreement. The Senate has consistently voted against that. In fact, the Kyoto, they didn't actually vote directly on it. They voted on a measure of should we vote on it, and they voted 95-0 not to vote on the Kyoto Protocol. And the reason they gave at the time was because they knew they couldn't get it through, but also Clinton knew he couldn't get it through, but also they said this is going to hurt the economy and cost jobs. And those are things that politicians are very, very vulnerable to. So the Paris Agreement then was an agreement, and then it wasn't binding, because there were several countries that did not want to sign any Kyoto or Green Climate Fund or anything else. Yes, there were the ones that were going to get paid out of it, but the ones that had to pay in didn't want to do that. And so they had to, what John Kerry and Obama created was an absolute shell. And ironically, they made it look good. Oh, yeah, they had all the PR. Yes, we finally got all the 193 countries involved. But go and look at how many actually contribute the money they were supposed to contribute to the Green Climate Fund. It's absolutely laughable.
We've only got about a minute here with you in this segment here. In terms of funding, a lot of this is going to affect so much of those political left organizations, because the EPA funded a lot of those. Do you see them replacing that money very easily?
No, they're not going to replace it very easily. And in fact, one of the ironies is that there were oil companies funding the left in order to try and buy them off to appease them. So that money will disappear. I would say 95% of the funding of climate research was coming from government, and it was only directed to proving the claim that human CO2 was causing global warming, when in fact proper science should try to disprove it. And it's going to collapse completely.
Well, that would certainly be a relief to see the end of extortion, because you're right, not only oil companies, but I know Walmart was another one that was having to, the green groups were extorting money from them. All right, let's go ahead and take a break there. Lots more with Dr. Jim Ball talking about the EPA's future. Stay with us. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show, helping you get a little more intelligence on big government. We're talking today to Dr. Tim Ball. He is one of the leading critics of the so-called global warming, especially the so-called scientific consensus in the global warming controversy. He's got a couple of books out there, Human Caused Global Warming, The Biggest Deception in History. Boy, is that proving true. The Deliberate Corruption of Climate Science, and those can both be found on iSpyRadio.com. Just go to the store tab there at the top. And we have the books from all of our iSpy Radio guests right there in one easy place there. And, so in the last segment, we were talking about cutting the funding and what that's going to mean for the left. And interestingly enough, what we're already seeing is, as Trump is saying that he's going to start cutting these regulations, especially on the EPA side, We're already seeing a huge bounce in job creation. He's cut the and additionally, he's cut the U.S. budget by $60 billion since his inauguration. What are your thoughts on that in terms of job creation?
Well, it's the one thing that he talked about in his election run was leadership. And of course, the role of leadership is to create a mood, to create a sense of, hey, we want to get ahead. One of the things I found crossing Canada and the United States, and certainly my own feelings, was very depressed. That there seemed to be just problems everywhere you looked, and you saw no solutions to them. And suddenly here comes Trump and just elevates. And I know when I was down in Phoenix at the Freedom Force conference, people were already the upbeat talk that was going on. And I then went from there to Washington to speak with Myron E. Bell and on Capitol Hill. And the sense of and that's permeated. There was Rush Limbaugh's been talking about that woman that went across the American Midwest and, yes, and predicted Trump's, yes, election. And you're seeing that even amongst Democrats. So this is it's already happening. So what you're seeing is businesses are already making decisions just on the fact that Trump got elected, and not even whether he actually passed legislation yet, but in the belief that he would keep his word and do it. So they're prepared to take risk, and that's what governments must encourage. So it's tremendous. But also the cutting of funding. Trump is going to do it in two ways. We'll cut back the civil service. One is straight attrition. Now, I stand to be corrected on this, but I understand there's something like 15,000 bureaucrats, federal bureaucrats a day that go into retirement. So you can cut
not
the numbers.
Not fast enough.
Yep.
Yeah, not fast enough.
Sorry?
I said not fast enough.
Well, no, it's not fast enough. But if you put that with picking off people that you want to fire because of their political activity, and then you also add into that downloading. Because by downloading, what I mean is get it out of the federal purview and put it back to the states. And of course, one of the things that allows the Trump administration to get around all of the rules and that these bureaucrats have written to protect their jobs so they can't be fired. You know, you look at Lois Lerner and Koskinen and IRS and all this stuff, and the way they built in protections for their jobs. But if you just simply eliminate the agency and pass it down to the states, you bypass all of those problems.
That's
so
right.
There's many things that he can do that would achieve very quick reductions in the federal agencies.
Yes, absolutely. And you know, I misspoke just now. It's not the budget that he cut. It's actually actual debt that he's cut by $6 billion since his inauguration. But in terms of cutting regulations, one of the important things about cutting those is that it really allows market forces to take place. For example, under the Obama administration, we have been constantly punishing coal and punishing fossil fuels, and yet America it's sitting on the world's largest amount of coal. And in a normal market situation, you would say, hey, we have a resource that we have an awful lot of. Let's look at how the ways that we can use that. And not just burning coal more cleanly, but maybe there's other aspects that coal could be used for. And so in a normal market situation, by cutting those regulations, saying hands off of coal and now opening that up, who knows what possibilities we could find by exploiting our coal reserves.
Well, of course, that's exactly what Obama was doing, was undermining that,
yes,
so that you interfered with the market, not directly, but by putting in regulations that businesses looked at it and said, no, we're not going to take those chances, not those risks. The other side of it, of course, is they did fund the marketplace to those things that suited them.
Yes.
Alternate energy, for example. Elon Musk and his Tesla car is over 80% government funding.
Yeah.
And alternate energies only survive because of the government funding that distorted the market even further.
That's right.
And so if you get rid of that, and by the way, you don't have to speculate on what's going to happen with what Trump does. You look at Germany. I mean, Germany is already experiencing where they're having to shut off power to regions for so many hours a day. Mm. Look at Australia, where states in Australia went to alternate energy are having brownouts and long periods without any energy and having to draw energy from other states that kept the coal burning.
That's
so
right.
You've only got to look around the world at regions that followed that whole green agenda to see what happens, and that's
why markets are so much more efficient than any bureaucrat. That's just the nature of markets. All right, everyone, stay with us. We're going to wrap things up with Dr. Tim Ball after this. And welcome back. We're in our final segment now here on the iSpy Radio Show, talking to Dr. Tim Ball. And, I'd like to talk a little bit about the media here, because as Trump rolls out his agenda, he is constantly fighting two things. He's constantly fighting Republicans in his own party, but also the media, because the media does help shape public opinion. And, of course, that then affects politicians. And you have a great poem, actually, that shows that in terms of the media, it has always been a problem. And it dates from 1782, if I'm correct.
Yes, it's a poem by William Cooper. And one of the things that Americans need to understand is what you inherited from England. You got rid of the monarchy, but you didn't get rid of the systems or some of the systems that the monarchy and the aristocrats set up to protect themselves. Mm. And the media was one of those. And now Jefferson, of course, and they all had their comments about the media. I think Jefferson said, a person who doesn't read a paper is better informed than one who does. So they knew, but the extent to which the media were the power or the carriers of the water for the power elite has persisted right up until Trump. And in 1782, Cooper wrote a poem called The Progress of Error that says, "How shall I speak of thee or thy power address, thou god of our idolatry, the press? By thee religion, liberty, and laws exert their influence and advance their cause. By thee worse plagues than Pharaoh's land befell, diffused make earth the vestibule of hell. Thou fountain at which drink the good and wise, thou ever-bubbling spring of endless lies, like Eden's dead probationary tree, knowledge of good and evil is from thee." And I love that line about ever-bubbling spring of endless lies. But just to illustrate my point, I taught seniors classes and always talked in the first half hour about things in the news. And one fellow, Alex Campbell, always asked very, very good questions. And I said, "You're well informed." And he said, "Thank you." I said, "You read the paper every day?" He said, "Oh, yeah, I never miss." I said, "How do you read it and not get angry and annoyed and upset like the rest of us?" He said, "It's simple. I read it a week late." Right? And it takes all the urgency. You look at a one-week-old newspaper, virtually none of it has any relevance anymore.
No.
And of course, that's what Cooper is talking about in his poem. And the power elite, of course, have used the media. I mean, look at the adulation of the New York Times. And yet it's nothing but a political water carrier for the left.
So it's
really interesting. And what's happened with Trump, of course, is he's bypassed it. He's got the new information vehicle, which is the internet. And I've argued at a conference in Phoenix recently that this is the final stage of the American Revolution. Mm-hmm. You had free speech, you had protection of free speech with the Second Amendment, you had private ownership of land, which created American exceptionalism, but the people did not have direct access to information. Now through the internet they do, so they do not have to rely on that ever bubbling spring of endless lies. And of course, despite what the media tried to do actively to get Clinton elected, it failed. And I think that's the final stage of the American Revolution.
Yeah, I think so as well. And unfortunately, we are up against the clock here with you. I want to thank you so much once again, Dr. Tim.
Well, thank you again for the opportunity, and we've got to keep talking.
Absolutely, we sure do. Before we go, a reminder to our listeners in the Grants Pass and Medford areas, the Jackson County Republicans are having their Lincoln Day dinner next Saturday, March 18th, at the Rogue Valley Country Club in Medford. The dinner starts at 6, but doors open at 4:30 for a no-host bar and social hour. I Spy Radio guest and NFL Super Bowl champ Burgess Owens will be the main speaker. For more details, see iSpyRadio.com and look for the events tab at the top. For everyone else, it's still a good idea to visit iSpyRadio.com for the links and info, because as we say every week, the best information is no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.